Fresh off the success of her multi-platinum Grammy-winning 2001 release All For You, Janet Jackson had been consistently putting out hit records for well over 18 years. When it was announced in early 2004 that Miss Jackson was to return with a new album, as well as a spot headlining the Super Bowl halftime show, the streets were buzzing, and nobody could have predicted the series of events that would follow, resulting in the end of Janet's commercial success as we knew it. At the center of all the drama was the album, Demita Joe, an album that unfortunately, due to circumstances in Janet's public persona at the time, was widely ignored and is totally underrated. Today, we take a look at the album Demita Joe, the music videos, the era. Because while Janet was blacklisted from TV and radio, she still gave us everything that you would ever expect from a Janet era. Sit back and maybe just hold on to your top tighter than usual. After all, we would not want any wardrobe malfunctions, darling. I had to go there. And let's dive into Demita Joe. From pop stars and boy bands to alt rockers and rappers, the 2000s had a bit of something for everyone. So it's no wonder that decades later, the same power of the music released has been so strong. I'm Michael Kadosh, and I want to welcome you to my musical time machine, where I deep dive into some of the best albums released in the 2000s. And I may even be joined by some special guests here and there. This is Planet 2000s.
It's been a while. I know I shouldn't have kept you waiting, but I'm here now. I'm back, you guys. Thank you for tuning into the podcast again. I am sorry for being gone so long. Life happens. I was traveling. And you know what? Sometimes you just go through things and you aren't as active in certain areas that you once were. But we are back, you guys. And I'm happy to say that I have got the next 8 episodes planned and ready to go. So over the next 8 weeks, it's going to be a fun time over at Planet 2000s because I got a lot of content coming for you. But today we are going to start things off with Janet Jackson, and we're talking about her Demita Joe album. I am joined later in this episode by my friend Kirk, who is a huge Janet fan. Now, I recorded that portion of the episode before I saw Janet. We both went to see her, and now I'm recording this part. I have now since seen her live, and it was amazing. It was actually the 4th time I saw her live, but it was the first time that she did a lot of songs that she had never performed before, and some of the songs were on this album. We're going to be talking about those songs. We're going to be talking about the Super Bowl. We're talking about all of it. Without further ado, let's get started. Demita Joe, it was the 8th studio album by Miss Janet Jackson. It got its official release on March 30th, 2004 through Virgin Records. The album's title comes from Janet's actual name. Her name is Janet Demita Joe Jackson, and the concept for the record is based around her alternate personalities. So there are themes of intimacy, monogamy, love, dancing, all that good stuff. And Janet, of course, at the time was head over heels in love with Jermaine Dupri, who we all know as the mega producer for artists such as Mariah Carey, Xscape, and others. There are many different genres that are included in the record, such as pop rock, electro, house, hip hop, with an all-around bass and reference to R&B music. So you're getting a little bit of everything, which is classic Janet. She always dipped into different genres in all of her albums. And this time she worked with many different producers in addition to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, whom she always worked with. But this time she was doing things a little differently. And she was, you know, she was working with Dallas Austin, Scott Storch, Rich Harrison, Telepop Music, Just Blaze, Kanye West, another one that just, so telling of the time. Janet also wrote with Babyface, who I love, John Legend, and pop maestro Kathy Dennis, who we know for writing Toxic by Britney Spears. The album was recorded over a period of 18 months, which is the longest Janet had ever taken to record an album.
This has taken me the longest, this album, to make. But I mean, there were some reasons why. There was a lot of stopping and starting. It took about maybe 18 months. It took quite a while. In the past, at the longest had been 6 months. Control took 2.5 months to do. Rhythm Nation took 3. So this is really different, but for me, for it to take this long to spew out an album, but there's good reason for it. I guess I am divulging a little bit more of myself on this album, and it's definitely much more intimate. And that's another side of myself that people have seen, but not to this level. It shows the different sides of me, the different characters that I feel that I display at different moments in my life. I've always wanted to do an album where the music is a complete departure from what people know me for, and I really didn't want anyone to know that it was me singing on the album. I was going to title it Demita Joe, which is my middle name. And when Dallas and I were sharing our middle names with one another, he had said to me, that's what you should call the album. And I thought, you know what, he's right. I shouldn't wait to do that. I should just use it now. Demita Joe is definitely who I am today, in all her schizophrenic personalities.
Remember, Janet's predecessor album was the ultra-successful All For You album, which was home to hits like All For You and Someone To Call My Lover, and was single for the first time ever, making headlines for rumored relationships with Matthew McConaughey and Justin Timberlake before finally just going public with Jermaine Dupri a little later on in that era. So now, Janet actually considered postponing music after All For You. Ultimately, she went with music. She was planning to do more film after this era. She was going to be playing Lena Horne in a Lena Horne biopic. Obviously, they took that role away after the Super Bowl fiasco. That was one of the repercussions. This album, she wanted to create songs with hard-hitting dance beats and, you know, sexy songs, songs that were about love. Her love of the islands is also showcased on the album. The different personalities that Miss Janet showcases, the headstrong Demita Joe, because that's like my Taurus girl, my Taurus sister, Demita Joe, and the mischievously sexy Strawberry. We hear her in the song Strawberry Bounce. And when she was asked about these alter egos, Janet said that they were just another way to express and expose a deeper part of herself. Very similar to an author who would invent characters with their own personalities.
My confidence level, I mean, I think it's definitely, as I've gotten older, it's grown, but I still have my moments though, where it regresses. There are days when it is that simple for me. And then there are days when you come up with a melody that you think, oh, this is going to be easy to sing. And then when you sing it out, it's like, wait, this isn't as easy to sing as I thought it would be. And I think, oh, I need to redo this. This doesn't sound so great, or you're not doing so well today. So, I mean, I have my moments. But it's definitely easier than it was in the past. And I think that's just from exercising the chords. I don't care how many lessons you might take, vocal lessons, which that definitely does help, but when you go out in concert or on a daily basis just around the house singing, and to just keep exercising and keep those chords going, I think more so than anything, that's what helps.
This idea that we are all a million people rolled into one is also explored in the intro of the record, Looking For Love, and that's kind of like a central theme on this album. The early sessions of the album consisted mostly of electro dance music before transitioning into an overtly sexual direction. If you've listened to the album, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Dallas Austin came into the picture at this point and said that this was easily the sexiest thing that she's ever done, and he was even comparing it to Prince's Dirty Mind. So that's how dirty we were going. Speaking about the persona, Jackson said, she's another way to express and expose a deeper part of me, Demita Joe. She's a lot harsher and quick to put you in your place, and she doesn't sit and ponder about stuff where I'll go, should I or shouldn't I? She's tougher than I am. And then there's Strawberry. She's the most sexual of them all, the wildest. That's what Janet said in Blender magazine. And fun fact, there were actually a few collaborations that were considered for this album. So Pink, Gwen Stefani, Beyonce, Justin Timberlake were all actually being commissioned to potentially record with Janet for this album, but plans fell through. But she did want to record with all of these people, and there were conversations had, but it just never happened. The album cover is absolutely stunning. Janet, topless, arms covering her breasts, smiling at the camera, laid back, natural, simple, youthful. I could go on and on. It totally fits the album's sensual theme to a T. Photo was shot by the talented photographer Andrew McPherson. It represented the album perfectly. There were four singles that were released from the album, Just a Little While, I Want You, All Night, and R&B Junkie. But before I can talk about the singles, I have to talk about an event that happened before the singles came out. And I think we all know what that event is.
Everyone at Viacom and everyone at CBS and everyone at MTV was shocked and appalled and embarrassed by what transpired. Ms. Jackson's unrehearsed and unapproved display went far beyond what is acceptable standards for our broadcast network.
The Super Bowl, right? I don't want to spend too much of this episode talking about the Super Bowl, but obviously we can't talk about the Demita Joe era without talking about the Super Bowl. Before the album was done, Janet was booked to perform at the Super Bowl halftime show, and she even promoted the performance with an MTV Super Bowl interview, because they were the promoters of the Super Bowl, they were the producers of this year's show. Now listen, we've seen the news coverage, we've seen the documentaries, it's gotten old. But what hasn't gotten old, for me, was the way that the situation was perceived and how it impacted her career. Viacom and CBS enforced a blacklist of Janet's singles and videos, and Justin was completely unaffected. And so while after the Super Bowl incident, Janet was urged to remove or tone down a lot of the lyrics on a lot of the songs on this album because, you know, she's getting a lot of shit about her sexuality after her breast was exposed. And a lot of the songs on this album are about sex. You know, Janet resisted the pressure. She said a lot of people had concerns and wanted me to take certain songs off the album, but I refused because in doing so, I would not be who I am and I'm not going to change. And that's fine. Either they like it or they don't. And I felt like everyone from the moment that Janet's breast was exposed was so scared to have anything remotely close to anything happening on their show. And so many precautions were taken anytime she went anywhere. At the Pro Bowl, which was happening the following week in Hawaii, JC Chazet was supposed to perform the national anthem and the halftime show. And then they decide to pull the halftime show because they didn't want him performing his hit Blowing Me Up With Her Love because it was a very sexually suggestive song. So Justin ruined that opportunity for him. The NBA All-Star Game also had Beyoncé change her set from Naughty Girl to Crazy in Love because they didn't want anything sexually suggestive being on television to incite any controversy. And Janet was actually at the NBA All-Star Game dressed very conservatively. You should look up the pictures. I'll post it on Blinded 2000s. In terms of the intense media ban, we can blame one man and one man only, Viacom CEO Les Moonves. He ordered that Janet's singles and music videos be completely blacklisted from all of their networks, which would include CBS, MTV, and all Infinity broadcasting radio stations. Janet was personally disinvited from the Grammy Awards. She even said so herself.
Justin Timberlake is here already with 5 Grammy nominations he's scheduled to perform, but Janet reportedly has been told not to come.
I was disinvited.
How did you feel about that?
I don't want to be anywhere that I'm not wanted.
She was supposed to serve as a presenter to the tribute to Luther Vandross, and they dropped her. Janet also had been cast, as I said earlier in the episode, to play Lena Horne in a biopic about her life, but was forced to resign because Lena had reportedly demanded that she be dropped. And a statue at Disney World of Mickey Mouse wearing the iconic Rhythm Nation outfit, which had been made the year before to cement Janet's legacy, was torn down from Disneyland. The first interview that Janet did post-Super Bowl was on The Late Show with David Letterman, which gave the show a bump of 20% in the ratings. Janet poked fun at herself on SNL in the opening skit.
Did anybody happen to see the Super Bowl? I was afraid of that. You know, the one reason why I wanted to do this show was so that people would see that I'm a regular person and that my family was an American, just the average family, no different than yours. I can prove this. I brought some old home movies. Would you guys want to see them? Yeah.
Now that SNL skit was iconic. Now, please, can we just talk about the music now?
So Janet says that this is going to be the first and the last time that she ever talks about what happened that day. First of all, I have to ask you this. Was it planned, Janet?
No.
It was not planned.
Well, what people don't understand is he was to take and rip the piece off that he did.
The letter piece.
Right, but more came off than what was supposed to.
So he was supposed to pull that off and we just see the red there. And he ripped the whole thing.
Yes.
So he had you practiced or whatever before?
Yes, we did.
And so the moment that happened, you immediately covered your breast because you didn't want to be exposed. If you'd wanted to be exposed, you wouldn't have covered it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Very embarrassing moment.
It was a very embarrassing moment.
Yes.
Well, 24 hours after that Super Bowl, Janet issued an apology. And I had read in another magazine that you regret making that apology. Is that true? Why?
It was an accident. And management that I had at the time, they thought it was important that I did, you know, with the project coming out. And I had said, actually, before I sat down to record the apology, that I had said to them,
what are you apologizing for?
Yeah, why am I apologizing for an accident?
Well, you did say in the apology you apologize for anybody who might have been offended.
Right, and they wanted me to say that, so I did. They thought it was best that I do, so I did.
Do you think in any way that Justin Timberlake left you hanging out there? I am speaking to Miss Jackson. Do you?
Well, all the emphasis was put on me, not on Justin. And
Justin, we were friends. Mm-hmm. And not that we aren't now. We haven't spoken, but I consider him a friend. And I'm very loyal, and friendship is very important to me.
Well, Justin Timberlake recently talked about the incident. Did you know that?
I heard.
Okay, on MTV. And this is some of what he said. He said, if you consider it 50-50, meaning I think that both of you were up there on the stage doing this, then I probably got 10% of the blame. I think America is harsher on women, he said, and I think America is unfairly harsh on ethnic people. So that's what he said. Do you think people were too hard on you?
I think they were. I think they did put all the emphasis mm-hmm. on me, and as opposed to us. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, just to let people know that Justin has reached out to we haven't spoken, but mm-hmm. has reached out to speak with me. And like I said, friendship is very important to me, mm-hmm. and certain things you just don't do to friends. Yeah. And in my own time.
Can't stop thinking about the things we do and how it feels making love to you. Written by Janet and Dallas Austin. Just a little while is Janet in her pure pop bag with lots of guitar. Janet hadn't done too many sessions away from Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis in the past before, but she was exploring more and more this time around. And working with Dallas Austin was a part of that. Janet recorded this track along with Sexhibition and the unreleased songs If You Want Me To and Let It Go with Dallas. And it was released as the leading single from the album on February 2nd, 2004, the lead pop single.
Just a little while, that's... This song... I mean, I'm so happy people have been as receptive to it as they have, but man, it's given me knots in my shoulders. It got leaked, and we tried to stop it because we weren't prepared to release it. It was always supposed to be the first single, but we weren't prepared to release it. And so it's kind of like playing catch up now with it all, trying to hurry up and get the video done because Europe got it. By the time we stopped it here, we found out Europe already had it. So we just said, okay, this thing is kind of bigger than us, so we have to kind of give in to it. I wrote it with Dallas, and it's a very poppy song with a lot of guitar. It's a happy up fun song.
Yeah, so the song actually leaked ahead of its scheduled release, so the record company had to rush record a music video and release the song as fast as they could, given that they were not prepared to release for another month, at least, before the song leaked. And the official release of February 2nd was the day after the Super Bowl. Initially, the song was receiving a very, very positive receptions from radio stations. However, once the calls came in to stop playing her after the Super Bowl, the radio stations axed the song completely. So it died. I'm talking like it was like debuting at number 9 on the top 40 charts, and then it just died like right away. Many media publications like Billboard and ABC News took note of it. So if everyone saw it happening, my thing is, why was it okay? It really makes no sense. Is it because she's a woman? The fuck out of here with that. Billboard had anticipated the song to be another immediate radio smash, even saying that Janet Jackson knows how to make a great single when they were reviewing the song. Entertainment Weekly had called the song skittish pared down guitar opening to be fresh and surprising. So people were really feeling the song, and it would have been a fucking huge hit. The music video was directed by the iconic Dave Myers, and it has that Y2K futuristic vibe that Janet had going on during the Doesn't Really Matter video. A little more edge, if you will. We get 5 different outfits in 6 different sets. I always loved the white hair Janet in the black leather outfit one. That was giving very similar to the Super Bowl outfit vibes, if you ask me. The video is set in Tokyo. MTV, which was considered then essential for promotion of a single at the time, especially in terms of Janet's career and how it had been going thus far, refused to play the video or any of her videos after the amount they had been fined from the FCC due to the Super Bowl. She was being hardcore boycotted, and only the Asian MTV networks decided to play the video.
Not only was it outrageous and offending to children, I think it's important to note it's enormously degrading to women to suggest that was proper behavior. But it is just the latest example, and what we've noted is a growing list of deplorable incidents on the nation's airwaves, and the increasing concern about coarseness has resulted in a dramatic rise in public concern. We've received 200,000 complaints on the Super Bowl incident alone. In a recent time, CNN study found that 47% of Americans said the incident marked, quote, a new low in bad taste, and I couldn't agree more.
The song only peaked at number 45 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, and it would have easily gone top three. It was her lowest peaking commercial single since 1982's Come Give Your Love to Me. The track performed well outside of the U.S. It peaked at number 2 in Belgium, number 3 in Canada and the Netherlands, number 6 in Spain, number 10 in Hungary, number 15 in the UK, and number 20 in Australia. And it actually did reach number 1 on the US Dance Club Play chart, at least. So it wasn't completely dead, but I think it's safe to say that most people don't really remember Just a Little While if they weren't Janet fans. I know that most people I know don't really know the song because it was never played. The second single from the album was I Want You, and it was rush released on February 22nd, 2004. As soon as Virgin Records realized that pop radio was not going to be getting behind Janet this era at all post-Super Bowl, they shifted their focuses completely towards marketing her to the urban audiences and to R&B radio solely. So the focus was shifted completely to promoting the single I Want You, which was produced by Kanye West. The song, also similar to Just a Little While, was victim of a leak, forcing Virgin Records to release the song way faster than they anticipated. This was 2004, guys. This was like just post Napster. Everything was leaking all the time. It was impossible to keep anything under wraps. Before streaming, everything leaked. Now I feel like people literally just wait for it to come out on streaming because it's free anyway. Originally, Just Blaze produced the song Love Me, which was an urban remix to Just a Little While, and it was going to be released to urban radio stations at this time to coincide with the pop release of Just a Little While. But when the label saw that the song was not going to be going anywhere due to the radio ban, they canceled the plans to release Love Me, and they ended up just going straight into I Want You, given that the song had just leaked. That Napster LimeWire era again, just intense. The song, written by Harold Lilly, Kanye West, and John Legend, with production done by Kanye, Jimmy, and Terry, along with Janet. The song is a mid-tempo ballad and has a beautiful retro sound. I have my issues with Kanye, as we all know, you guys, but he really did do his thing on the production of this song. The song is about Janet's longing for her estranged lover and her going around in circles thinking about him and wanting him so badly. Both Kanye West and John Legend were up-and-coming artists at this time, so Janet was really ahead of the curve here, working with both of them. Both would blow up not too long after the release of this single, so she was obviously onto something. She always had a great ear for talent. Dave Myers directed the video as well, after doing the video to Just a Little While, and it got its TV premiere on March 16th, 2004 on BET's Access Granted, an iconic show that they really need to bring back.
You know, the concept of the video, once in, you know, the song's like kind of like old school R&B kind of vibe to it, so you know, we just wanted to be real stripped down and real simple with the video.
It wasn't a lot of major wardrobe, major hair, major makeup. It was just very simple and very real in a sense, you know. So I like that, and I hadn't done a video like that, it seemed like, in a way.
That's not true.
Janet looks absolutely stunning. She's wearing a peach colored crop top. She has a black cardigan, a signature 2000s low-rise jean. I mean, she's walking around Brooklyn, even though they filmed it in LA. The video was designed to have an intimate, like, community feel, according to Dave, the director. Obviously, the intention was, like, to try to soften her image a little bit, giving everything she touched had so much controversy attached to it because of the Super Bowl, yet those titties were still out and popping. She refused to put them away in this era. And I'm thankful for that. I'm very thankful for that. Despite being negatively impacted by the intense radio and TV ban from Viacom, the song still was certified platinum and earned Janet a Grammy nomination in 2005 for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance, and the video was played by BET and VH1 at the very least. While MTV was still deciding to remain completely silent on the Janet blacklist, they were continuing to enforce. The song reached number 57 in the USA, number 18 on the R&B US charts, and as we mentioned earlier, was certified platinum as well. At least it got its platinum certification, but it did deserve a lot more. Now, to me, the hit that got away from this album is All Night Don't Stop. I really truly believe that if All Night Don't Stop had come out when Janet was Janet and not impacted by the Super Bowl, it would have been a number one hit. It was released as the third official single from the album on May 17, 2004. It has an electro-funk R&B dance vibe. It slaps even harder today than when I first heard it when I was 8 years old in 2004, or maybe I was 9. There's no doubt in my mind that if the blacklist wasn't happening, that it would be the biggest hit, because
people still know it. Like, to this day, people I know it. And so I'm like, okay, if it was a hit in the streets, you know, I know it would have been big on the charts. And it even has like a little samba Latin vibe. I even hear some dancehall in there. And there was that dancehall remix with Elephant Man, so I don't think I'm reaching here. But you guys can tell me that. The song was written by Janet and the Swedish producers Bag and Arthur, along with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis adding their own flares to the song as well. And it was recorded in the same sessions as the songs Slow Love and the unreleased tracks I'm Here and Put Your Hands On. Slow Love is a fan favorite, and I talk about this with Kirk later in the episode. Lyrically, the song is about being addicted to dancing, with many sexual metaphors being used to describe this feeling. Earthquakes, masturbation, pole dancing, corkscrews, computer hacking, you name it. The metaphor is used in the song, but it's steamy and it's iconic, and I would not change it. The video was directed by Francis Lawrence, who is the genius behind the I'm a Slave for You video, as long as many, many more great pop videos. It premiered May 13, 2004, held at the abandoned El Dorado Hotel in Skid Row in LA. And it's a sweaty underground dance party in the video. The exact vibe that was needed to be exuded to capture the sexual essence of the song. The outlets faced criticism for removing a kiss between two female dancers. I'm talking, you know, VH1 and all the networks that played the video. They removed a kiss from the two female dancers. And when GLAAD's entertainment director, Steven Marcias, was talking to the New York Blade, he said that, "I think it's always a concern when the gay and lesbian community is not allowed to be depicted in the same way that the straight community is, and especially when that revolves around the way our relationships and romantic situations are depicted." He also added that Janet supports gay causes and has been persistently active in portraying equality among the gay community, and would never have approved that edit. I feel like we're still dealing with this shit today. I mean, it's Pride Month right now, but it doesn't feel like a festive Pride Month. I don't know if I'm the only one, you know, who feels this, but I feel so much hatred from people right now. Not geared towards me personally, but just towards the community as a whole. And obviously that impacts me being a member of it. So it's sad to say that it's still going on. The video got a little edit due to the steaminess, and it was played on Much Music and BET as well. However, MTV was still not playing the video. The song is generally one of the only songs on the Demita Joe album which gets live treatment on tours, except for this current tour, Together Again tour. She performs Like You Don't Love Me and the song Demita Joe. So that's very, very, very exciting. It was fucking lit live, too. It really was lit. The song, like Just a Little While, reached number one on the U.S. Dance Club Songs chart. And elsewhere, it reached number 13 in Spain, number 19 in the U.K., and number 119 in the U.S., the bubbling under chart. So number 19 on the chart, making it 119 equivalent. Which, like, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? Deserved so much better. I want to take this time to talk a little bit about some songs on the album that weren't actually singles, but I feel like if, you know, the album had been a little bit more successful, they would have gotten some love. I mean, this first one that I'm going to talk about was technically a single, but obviously, like, it was not treated as such. So we'll talk about that. First up, R&B Junkie. It was the planned fourth single from the album. It did get a light release on adult R&B radio, but once the Demita Joe tour plans fell through, more on that later, the label decided to just put a complete close to the Demita Joe era altogether. So obviously we saw that Janet performed the song in a medley with All Night Don't Stop at the 2004 BET Awards, indicating that the song had larger plans than just being a song on the album. But we never saw another performance of that song until her 2019 Las Vegas limited residency Metamorphosis. So I guess that just never happened. And it makes sense. I guess they were like, Virgin Records, why are we beating a dead horse here? The song is so fun, a post-disco funk R&B song with that pulsating sample of Evelyn King's 1981 classic, I'm in Love. All you R&B lovers out there, you know the song I'm talking about. The song did reach number 17 on the U.S. Adult R&B Songs chart and number 1 on the U.S. Bubbling Under R&B Hip Hop Songs chart, equivalent of reaching number 101 on that chart. Now, for another song that I love on the album, I'm actually going to let Janet tell you about Thinking About My Ex.
One of the songs that I did on the album is titled Thinking About My Ex, which actually someone I've been dying to work with for a really long time, which is Kenny Babyface Edmonds. I think he's an amazing talent. He actually produced it, and it was written by a woman named Freckles. I think it's just a beautiful song. I fell in love with it. The minute I heard it. Loved the lyrics, but it says it's thinking about my ex, and you know, I had decided
to put maybe in underneath that. It's not. It's not who you think it is I'm talking about. I think that's very important for people to know. It's just an absolutely beautiful song. And for a split second, the idea came up to change the lyrics, because everyone thought, this is a great song, but I'm not so sure you're gonna like the lyrics. And the song is so beautifully written, I didn't want to change them.
The lyrics are heartbreaking, and even her vocals, you just hear the yearning. And you hear the breathiness. It gives such vulnerability. And it's always a song I loved. Sexhibition, the song, is a fun play on words on sex. It has an electro-funk vibe with many verbal puns like sexplore, sexplosion, sexcapade, and of course, sexhibition. And in the words of Janet, relax. It's just sex.
Sexhibition. Sexhibition. I feel like the title kind of... The title says a lot. It's basically, in writing it, I wrote it with Dallas. It's an up-tempo song. And we just thought we'd have fun with words. Play on words. Exhibition. Successful. Sexplanation. Sexplosion. So it's kind of like a play on words.
Another song on the album that I personally love is Island Life. This track was co-written by the lovely Kathy Dennis of Toxic and Can't Get You Out of My Head fame. It's pure seduction, an entrance into Janet's erotic dreams.
I love the island, and that's a great escapism for me when I get stressed out. I always want to be by the water, and that feeling is what I get. And I feel the song displays that feeling, at least the feeling that I get. I would say that I love them, all the songs on the album, equally. There isn't one in particular that I'm drawn to a little more than the others, because they all have a different and special meaning of their own, each and every song for myself. So I can't pinpoint one more than the other.
Majority of Janet's performances were now being enforced with a automatic 5-second delay, and even advertised as such in order to ensure audiences' safety that her breast will not be exposed. Absolutely wild, y'all, because people have never seen a fucking breast before. Get over yourselves, y'all. I will never be able to wrap my head around it. It is a fucking breast. My God. Janet did her rounds around Europe, where the singles were usually performing better. She did Top of the Pop, CD UK, Channel 4, and Les Années Tube, as well as a surprise appearance at the 2004 MTV Japan VMAs and the Japanese variety special Hey Hey Hey, because hey, they were giving her love, so she gave way more love to the worldwide markets during this era. She also made her rounds around Canada, performing on Much Music and doing a live Q&A for Much More Music. In America, she did Good Morning America, Ryan Seacrest, Jay Leno, SNL, and a disastrous David Letterman interview. He cringily would not stop objectifying her to the audience, and it was fucking embarrassing. All the American talk shows wouldn't stop badgering her about the Super Bowl, and she clearly was very uncomfortable, as were we.
It was truly an accident. It wasn't supposed to happen.
Wasn't supposed to happen. What was supposed to happen?
Oh, God. Can we talk about something else, please? I've had a day of interviews, and I'm sure you guys are sick of hearing about it. I know I am. Let's ask me about something else.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they are sick of hearing about it. Here's the way I look at life. Sometimes things are good. Sometimes things are bad. And when things are bad, it's always important to have someone to blame. So that's why I believe that it's this Timberlake guy. I think it's his fault. Now he kind of went Weasley on you and said, no, I had nothing to do with this. It was not my deal. I didn't know what was going on.
That's what I heard.
Now, did he know what was going on?
No, it wasn't supposed to happen the way that it did, James.
But, you know, it looked like it was supposed to happen that way.
Oh. You're not going to let me...
At At least I'm now looking back and having watched many of these in preparation for this podcast episode, I'm just like, what the fuck? You know, like, it's just not right. It's not right. Virgin Records definitely did the best they could to be behind Janet and this project, given that the radio and TV ban was happening. They actually put on the event Virgin Records presents to meet a Joe, a celebration with Janet Jackson, and gift bags, you know, included over $18,000 in merchandise, a membership to a gym, and of course, double-sided tape to avoid those wardrobe malfunctions. At least they tried to play into it, man. Celebrity guests included Patrick de Montchelier, Lindsay Lohan, L.A. Reid, Courtney Love, Patti LaBelle, Ja Rule, Ice-T, Brian McKnight, Wendy Williams, and so much more, guys. The photos are iconic. I am definitely going to be posting them as well on Planet 2000s. Promotion for the album obviously didn't go as planned for reasons related to the Super Bowl. Originally, Janet was planning on beginning a world tour in September 2004 with Mario Winans as the opening act. You know him. I don't wanna know if you're playing me. Keep it on the low. But given that their radio ban was on, the album wasn't going as well as they had hoped, and there was virtually no support from any of the media outlets, she decided to just shut it down and go back into the studio to begin work on the album 20YO instead. I also told you earlier she was banned from attending the Grammys and the MTV VMAs that year. But she then went on to be nominated for more Grammys that following year, making it seem like she wasn't banned. However, Janet has never returned to the Grammys since and has missed out on two Lifetime Achievement Award opportunities due to the CBS Viacom ban. The Viacom ban was lifted, as far as MTV is concerned, in 2008 with the Discipline era. But CBS, y'all, not so much. They have not given Janet any fucking love at all. Proof is in the pudding. Janet replied to critics, focusing on the album's suggestive content and the Super Bowl incident in place of the music itself, stating that she was fascinated by these interpretations, expressing concern for society's need to often place others within a specific sexual category. Granted, reviews for the album were already going to be strewed, right, due to the preconceived prejudices against Janet post-Super Bowl. Having said that, the album still got mixed reviews from critics. USA Today rated the album 3 out of 4 stars, saying Janet isn't sweating it musically, despite negative publicity. The critique said that Janet freely pursues her sexual and love fantasies, noting if she ever seemed tentative in her erotic explorations in the past, she's completely self-assured here. Neil Strauss of Rolling Stone gave the album 2 out of 5 stars, saying Demita Joe smacks of trying too hard. Well, you know what? I'm not even going to read you the rest of this review because they suck for that one. And a majority of the reviews for the album, including those by AllMusic, BBC, Entertainment Weekly, Guardian, and the New York Times, focused on the negative backlash suffered by Jackson as a result of the incident, but actually gave favorable reviews to the album itself. So I just think that this was the, you know, deck of cards she was dealt, and she did the best that she could with it. Janet won the American Music Award that year for Favorite R&B Female Artist, and as well as the Inspiration Award at the MTV Japan VMAs, and an Outstanding Female Artist recognition at the NAACP Image Awards. This album also received 2 Grammy nominations for Best Contemporary R&B Album at the 2005 ceremony, but lost to Usher's Confessions. She was also nominated for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance for I Want You, but lost to Alicia Keys' If I Ain't Got You. Now, Demita Joe earned Janet her second highest first week sales of her career and was certified platinum, so it's still sold. Selling 381,000 copies in its first week, Demita Joe debuted at number 2 on the Billboard 200, only behind Usher's Confessions, and it was Janet's first album not to hit number 1 since the 1984 album Dream Street. It reached number 7 in Canada and number 10 in Japan. It has a platinum certification in the USA and Canada, as well as a gold certification in Japan and Singapore. The album has sold around 3 million copies worldwide, and the massive radio and music channel Blacklist played a huge part in the album's response and sales. It wasn't being promoted anywhere because nobody wanted to play it or get themselves associated with the media circus that was surrounding Janet at that time. And a lot of media outlets were actually comparing the response to the album to the recent musical slump that Madonna was experiencing with her 2003 album American Life. But Madonna saved herself from the backlash a little bit because she didn't release the American Life video. So they know it existed, but nobody saw it. So she kind of got away with it. And the funny thing is that it was considered a disappointment from the get-go, the Demita Joe album. The numbers that the album sold were quite good, but it just wasn't the same as All For You. And an album that many people expected would be outsold by Demita Joe. You know, Demita Joe, everyone thought it was going to outsell All For You because there was so much hype and she was still so big that far into her career. But nevertheless, she's still a fucking icon and she is getting her flowers in her own right to this day. I do think her legacy was tarnished a little bit. I think that her team is working very hard at rebuilding it, and they are doing a very good job. But I just think that she could have been even bigger, which is wild. Wild. But I hope you guys enjoy the Demita Joe album. And now I'm going to be talking to Kirk DeMatteis, who is a member of the Jan fam, the Janet fans, and has been to many, many Janet shows, including one iconic one in particular that we talk about. So I cannot wait for you guys to hear our conversation. And thank you guys for listening and for coming back. And I missed you, so I hope you missed me too. I will now turn it over to me and Kirk. I am joined by my friend, one of maybe the biggest Janet fan I know, and bigger than myself. And y'all know I'm the biggest Janet fan. So if I'm saying that, it means something. Please give a warm welcome to my friend Kirk.
Hello. That's so sweet. My name is Kirk DeMatteis. I've been a long time Janet fan since I was 15 in 1993. So you don't have to do the math, but it's a long time.
Big year this year.
Yes. It is a big year. It's 30 years now. This is a huge year. Janet, 30th anniversary. She's back on tour after this whole pandemic.
And so I want to let everyone know, so how did you and I get in touch? I guess this must have been during the pandemic, or maybe right before the pandemic, when Janet was announcing her Black Diamond tour. I guess, you know, social media was buzzing. Both Kirk and I are from Toronto. And so I guess we connected on that level. And then during the pandemic, we like chatted on the phone and talked all about like Janet and your experiences. And you've had some pretty fucking awesome Janet experiences. Before we talk about the album, why don't you give a little insight to the Planet 2000's listeners on some of the special moments you've had with Janet over the years?
Well, back in 98, she actually went to Much Music to do one of those interactive video interviews. Yes. And the fans got to go in and sit, and a friend of mine, JP, and I, who's also a singer-songwriter himself, he and I got in. We got to sit right in front of Janet, maybe like 10 feet away from her. And we just got to see, like, we got to see her just be interviewed. But she also was just like, she was so humble. You know, like, we just got to see her just like, she just walked in. She didn't come in with airs about herself. She didn't have smoke or anything like that. She's like,
right.
And sat down. And and so when there were commercial breaks, she would turn to fans and say, hi, how are you? And she just asked people how they were doing. And they would ask her back. And then she looked at me and I couldn't say anything because I was just like starstruck. I just kind of stared at her like a dork. And she just kind of like, she didn't know what to say. So the next night we were at the concert.
Before you continue, just for reference for you guys listening who aren't from Canada, I&I, Intimate and Interactive on Much Music, is the equivalent. So Much Music was our MTV, as many of you listening would know. I've talked about it a lot. And Intimate and Interactive was a series that Much Music had where whenever there would be a big star come into town, so i.e. Janet, Madonna, whatever, they've all done this. You know, they would sit in the studio, all the fans would be around them, they would get to ask questions, it would be like an intimate and interactive performance. I actually happen to work in the building where those intimate and interactives used to happen. So it's for those of you guys listening who maybe don't get it, it's a huge Canadian like throwback music staple. It was a big part of our culture for a very long time. And Janet was here in 98, which is when what Kirk was referring to. But yes, the next night was the big one. The big night.
Yeah, the next night was the big night. While we were waiting for Much Music, we actually met some of our dancers. And that's important because the next night, when we were at the concert, Usher was the opening act and he was performing, but we wanted to get autographs from the dancers. Right. And we snuck onto the floor because you were able to do that in the Sky Dome at the time, in the Sky Dome, which is now called Rogers Center, I think. Mm-hmm. And we were sitting at the 100 level, but we just went down right to the floor and we saw Gil, which is Janet's current creative director, one of her best friends, and it was his first job with Janet was as a dancer on the Velvet Rope Tour in 98. So we saw him and right. We just said, oh, hey, Gil, we met you yesterday. Can we just get an autograph? He autographed our tour books, but then he took our tickets and he just gave us second row center.
Amazing. Amazing.
For anybody listening, what Janet has done since the Rhythm Nation Tour in 1990 was that she would give the best seats possible to her dancers and tour personnel and tell them to go look for fans, like the real fans and the ones who didn't have the best seats, and just give them those best seats so that they can see the show up close. So, and she still does that to this day. So
I was going to say like, oh, I hope she does that. But then I'm like, I mean, I'm already fifth row center, so I guess it's fine.
I mean, she's definitely going to see you. That's for sure.
Yay. Okay. Yes. Continue.
She will do. Throw those hearts up as always. She will definitely.
Yes.
So second row center, we debated for a few seconds because we were with some friends and we didn't want to leave them. But at the same time, I said, you guys, you can't miss this opportunity. So we took it. Second row center, and we got to enjoy the show. Thinking back, this is 1998. So even though the internet was around, you know, you didn't have video and photo of all the concerts that night that you can look and see and find out what's happening.
Or that moment, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. So we didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know she was going to bring a person on stage. And when she's finished singing I Get Lonely, she starts walking around looking at the crowd. And I'm second row center, so I'm just trying to get her attention. And I'm pumped. And I just kept on telling her I love her. Everybody else around me, not everybody, but a bunch of people around me were saying, like, pick me, pick me. I wasn't paying it. I didn't know why they were saying that. I don't know why I didn't know that, but I just didn't clue in. And I was just saying, I love you. And she was looking at me saying that. And then she pointed to me and she said, you. And once again, I don't know what she's talking about. So I'm like, I don't know if she's bringing someone on stage. So I'm like, oh. And I was like, wait. I turned to my friend like, oh, I think she's picking you. And then she says, no, I want you. I'm like, oh.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and validation then, for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I was, and keep in mind, like, I had, like, grew up in a Catholic household, was still in the closet at that time, insecure right. about my appearance, etc. So to have Janet, who was like queen, say, like, you, and she's picking mm-hmm. me, she's choosing me, like, that just, like, made all that disappear for at least that moment. And
she felt your love. She felt your love and she felt your passion. And that's something that she, you know, doesn't take for granted to this day. She always says how much she loves and appreciates her fans. And she felt that from you right in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she realized, I was like, okay, now he's communicating. Like, I couldn't communicate that before, but now I was just like, okay, I'm trying to tell you something.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And then she performed for you, Ropeburn. You were one of the Ropeburn boys in 1990.
I was.
All the Rope Tour.
I was. And all I remember just, I was, my heart was beating so fast. I was really hot. Like, you just hear all the people screaming. And I didn't want to lose sight of her.
Right.
And I wear glasses all the time. But when I got on the stage, I took my glasses off and put them in my pocket because I didn't want her to see my glasses on.
Right.
So I couldn't see that clearly. So I had to, like, squint. So I had no choice but to keep my eyes on her. But I kept my eyes on her.
That's perfect, though. You had no choice but to be in the moment with Janet.
Exactly. I mean, some parts were, you know, I craned my head in certain awkward ways because she was walking behind the chair and I didn't want to lose sight of her.
Right.
And I'm sure that was very funny because I heard people laughing. So, and I do remember one point she was biting her lip to stop from laughing. So I was definitely being very comical.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. That's what they want. They want good vibes. They don't want creepy, like, sex vibes. They want, like, fan dying vibes.
You know? Exactly. And I definitely did.
So you had that moment with her those 2 days. And then didn't you go to the Intimate and Interactive in 2001 as well for All For You?
I did. With the same friend, JP. And we were standing behind Master T as he was conducting the interview. So we still had a direct line of sight to Janet. After the Ropeburn performance, the security gave me 2 Polaroids that they actually took from the stage so that I can have them as a keepsake. So I brought them to the All For You Intimate Interactive. Nice. And I held them up at my chest so she could see. But what was amazing is she didn't even look at them. She just looked at my face and then she pointed to me. She's like, Velvet Rope, right? You look good. I didn't know what to say. I'm like, oh my God. She remembered me. She didn't even look down at the picture. She just looked at my face.
Do you still have those photos to this day?
I do. I am bringing them to the concert.
I was going to say, because for those of you guys listening, Kirk has meet and greet for Janet. Are you going to bring it to the show? Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to do the exact same thing. I'm going to hold them up to my chest and just, like, be walking towards her so she can hopefully look at them. But yeah, I'm bringing them for sure. I just...
Amazing. Amazing. I'm so excited for you, and I'm so happy that you're here today. Well, we're here today to talk about the Demita Joe record, and the Demita Joe album is special because I would probably say that this is the first album, at least for me, that I was old enough to be completely present for. Like, All For You, I was still, you know, I was 6 years old during All For You, but I was a huge fan, but I was very young, so I wasn't necessarily following what was going on. I was bought the CD, and I just listened to the CD. You know, I didn't really know what was going on in the era. So Demita Joe was the first era that I really knew what was going on. And unfortunately, it wasn't the best era. But we're not even here today to talk about that because we already did that in the first half of this episode. We're here to talk about the music and the amazing album that it is. So we're going to go track by track. And I'm so excited that you're here and I'm ready to do this with you. So why don't we get started? If you know Janet albums, you already know that interludes are essentially tracks because that is what the Janet album consists of. And that is the epitome of a Janet album, interludes. Telepop Musique is the producer. He was an early 2000s DJ that she found along with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Track one, interlude, Looking for Love.
Poetic is the first word to come to my mind. Absolutely. Mm. It was pure poetry. It was lush. I mean, the whole album was lush, but that was a perfect introduction to the album.
What a great word to describe this record. Lush.
Lush.
Silk sheets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Warm, but not too hot kind of vibes.
Yeah. And you know, the lyrics talk about, you know, how there's many different characters within us. That's a very common theme in this album. It's all the different characters within Janet. There's Demita Joe, there's Strawberry, who we meet later on.
No, do we ever. Right.
Yeah, it's all the different characters that live within us. And this is talking about how they're all essentially looking for one thing, and that's love. Something that I haven't found yet, but we won't talk about that right now. It's poetic. There's a lot of poetry on this record, for sure. Huh?
Yes, yes. And I'm a poet, so that speaks to my heart right there.
As somebody who writes, you know, you are also a very talented writer. I would love for you to talk about your projects in a little bit, and feel free to right now. But how do you feel about the way that Janet, not even just with Looking for Love, even just in all her albums, the way that she intertwines obviously hard beats and great music along with the art of spoken word, something that she does in all her albums?
Her lyrics, the lyricism that she incorporates into her music, like she can have some very simple lyrics that just get to the point, but then she can also follow that lyric up with something a bit more deeper out of nowhere, but in it fits and it's smooth. Life is complex. It can also be easy, and it can also be light, it can also be fun, it can also be dark. So, and I find that her lyrics, Damage, have all of that. They have all those layers.
And this album has many moments like this, and I think starting it off on this note is definitely telling to what we're about to see. And going into the first, like, real track, Demita Joe, the song, and an amazing song, a song that to me always reminds me for some reason of Britney Spears in that era, because she talked about how much she loved this album, and iTunes was a thing that made playlists. Like the artists would make a playlist, and on Britney's, the song Demita Joe was on there. Fun fact.
Yeah. Well, and I remember the photo of her holding the album in a car too.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, yes. I'm so happy you know what I'm talking about. All the girls loved the Demita Joe album. Even Lindsay Lohan, I remember, did an interview and she was like, I work out to the Demita Joe album. This was like Mean Girls era Lindsay. It's so fun, and everyone loved the song Demita Joe. I'm a little shocked that there was no single treatment for this song. I think there would have been so much potential because it tells the story of the album.
Just like the fierce attitude of it. I mean, I think there should have been a video, if even if it wasn't a single, but at least a video to kind of promote it, like a teaser.
If I'm not mistaken, because, you know, she's currently on the Together Again tour, and she opens the tour with this song. Is this the first time she's ever, this is the first time she's ever done this live, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. First time. Wow. So I'm so excited to see this live.
I can't wait. By the time this episode is posted, I'm more than likely, you know, we're recording this end of April. I'm more than likely posting it right, like, a couple days before our show. The Demita Joe track is going to be performed at the Together Again tour with purple outfit and all. It's just exciting to finally be able to put a visual to the song, because a lot of the songs on this album have been us using our imagination, because there were not many visuals for this album. There were only 3 videos. There was no tour, not very many performances, you know, so there aren't very many songs that we can attach to a visual, obviously, aside from the singles. So it's nice that now we're finally going to be able to get that for the song. And I love the lyrics. I love her using her middle name as a kind of like a pseudonym for all the different sides of her, how she's sexy, but she's quiet. She's shy, but she's down for a good time. I love how she reps her sign, my Taurus sister, Janet. I am a Taurus May 2nd. She is a Taurus May 16th. And we are of the same breed, me and her. So I'm very happy. And she reps it in the song. And it's a great way to start the album, you know, from Looking for Love into this song. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis with Janet. Magic, always.
It was perfect. It was a perfect track.
And going into track 3, this was one of the songs that Janet didn't do with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. This was, you know, during All For You, she experimented working with Rock Wilder, but she still had Jimmy and Terry through the whole process. This is the first album where we have songs that they weren't even a part of at all. So Sexhibition was completely Dallas Austin. She worked with Dallas, and it's just her, you know, having a play on words with sex and everything having to do with sex. That's what we should call it. This album should have just been called Sex.
It should have just been called Sex. In fact, I think there was another version of this album, but I don't know if that's just fan lore, if there's actual like fact about that. Like they might have just like rejigged some of the tools, because there were so many tracks recorded for this album. Right. And then there's a lot of fan lore, as you know.
Well, she worked on this album for 18 months. She's very vocal about how this is the longest she ever took to make an album.
Mm-hmm. And she worked with a lot of other artists who did not even appear in this album. So their tracks are still in a vault somewhere.
I hope we get to hear those someday.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I want to hear them all. I'm so
curious. Sexhibition is fun. I feel like Sexhibition is almost like a TikTok song. I feel like before TikTok songs were TikTok songs, I remember thinking when I was younger, I was like, this song is only 2 minutes and 29 seconds. This is like an interlude. Nowadays, that is a song. And even the type of song that it is, the play on words with sex and everything, I could totally see being a TikTok moment.
When I first heard it, and I think the first verse has her say sexcapade, and I was like, oh, she took escapade, but she just like dialed it up a different hole, just totally made it sexual. I'm like, whoa.
A different hole.
Yeah, it's a whole other thing now.
Yeah, she's taking us on a sexcapade, and she is getting into the next song, not to get too early, but you know, Strawberry is here.
Oh yeah, Strawberry's here.
Who is Strawberry? Tell the listeners who Strawberry is.
Strawberry is, oh gosh, how would we even describe Strawberry? I think Strawberry has no inhibitions at all. Strawberry has no inhibitions. Strawberry is the character who embodies all of Janet's baby making songs.
Think Sasha Fierce before Sasha Fierce existed, but only sex.
Yes, only sex. That is her thing. It's just
what's,
sex.
What's the song? What's the JB video with her and the schoolgirl?
Gotta Getcha.
Watch that video, guys. That's Strawberry.
That is Strawberry.
That Strawberry out in full force, and we hear her on Sexhibition, which is a song that I love, strong song. Moving into track number 4, they all kind of go in. Those first couple of songs kind of merge together to me. Strawberry Bounce. This is Strawberry's official introduction, kind of like Beyonce's Single Ladies was for Sasha Fierce. And Janet did an SNL performance for this, so I feel like there could have been single potential. It's a Kanye West written song and produced.
Yeah, and actually, funnily enough, like we just watched the Saturday Night Live performance tonight, like just before.
Really? You just watched it?
Yeah. Because a friend of mine put it on DVD for me, like just burned it. So I was just watching it. I'm just like, this song is so good live. And just like the theatricality of it. Mm-hmm. Like this should have been a single. Like it's just like she had so much fun with it and like just so much attitude. Like, and it is Strawberry. I mean, she's got a cigar at the end of the performance and she puts a cigar out in someone's chest. Like, it's just, I was like, that is totally Strawberry in the flesh.
I feel like had the era gone differently, like had there not been the Super Bowl, had there not been the radio and MTV ban and the blacklisting and whatnot, and had it gone according to the plan of the normal Janet album, singles-wise, Strawberry Bounce would have gotten single treatment for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was made to be released as a single.
I'm upset that she's never performed it on a tour, but I am happy that we have the SNL moment, because at least I'm like, fuck it, she performed it on SNL. You know what? We got what we needed from at least from this era. You know, that was probably the most high profile promo appearance, I would say, apart from the Super Bowl, arguably.
Yeah, for sure. And what I thought was interesting, like just watching it again, is like, okay, so she did All Night Don't Stop, SNL, same episode, mm-hmm. before, early on in the episode.
Which is my same favorite song on the album and one of my favorite songs by Janet, period, but yes.
And one that should have been a hit.
It was a hit in my household.
Absolutely. Here too. but like for Strawberry Bounce, like the stage looked completely different. Like they really built up a stage for that performance. We see the normal SNL stage where they just have the band at the back and they don't have nothing else has kind of changed around it. But for Strawberry Bounce, like they had a whole backdrop, they had a pole. I was just like, oh, it looks like a completely different stage. Mm-hmm. So I could totally see this performed on a tour just based on that performance.
I feel like this song deserved to be a top 10 hit. It could have been a big hit on urban radio as well. It was totally on brand and on theme with the sound of that time, with Crunk and B being such a big hit. But you know what? Fuck it. It's a fan favorite, and fuck the haters, because this song is great. And I feel like people didn't want to hear it. If people had heard it, they would have enjoyed it. Kanye produced this song. He produced a few songs on this album. This was the era when Kanye was working with like Mariah and Alicia, and he was working with all the R&B and girls and legends. He did this song, Strawberry Bounce, and he did the track number 5, My Baby, featuring Kanye West. And this one, he gave us a verse. His name is Kanye Omari. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be sorry or tell us he's sorry, whatever the hell those lyrics are. Very cute. I love the earrings coming up in a half an hour, because now he can afford real diamonds.
Yeah. I actually saw that visual.
That's why I pointed out. I'm like, oh my God. I think My Baby also could have been a huge R&B hit. I feel like this is, I have my issues with Kanye West. We all know this. Mm-hmm. He's a terrible mm-hmm. person. But
agreed.
But you know what? Like, I'm going to still appreciate art for what it was. And it's like, he created this art for Janet. I'm not going to not listen to Janet. Just, I'm not going to ruin my experience with the art I always enjoyed because of him. Let's put it that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Exactly. I still bop this song all the time.
I love this song. It's one of my favorites on the album. I feel like it's also funny enough, you guys, this album unfortunately doesn't get too many streams on Spotify, but My Baby is one of the higher streamed songs. It has 2.5 million streams, and it actually is the third most streamed song on the album after All Night and I Want You.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I feel like obviously Kanye's name being attached to it has obviously an allure that attracts people, but it is a beautiful song and could have been a single. He also did a similar song with Brandy around this time called Where You Want to Be on her Aphrodisiac album that came out around this time. That was just the sound that he was going for with the girls, and I loved it. In terms of My Baby, what were your feelings when you saw her working with Kanye? Because she hadn't really worked with a rapper on so many songs on a record like she had on this one.
Yeah, because like he only does rap on this one, but then he does a lot of production. So I just thought it was like different. I'm like, okay, this is good. Like she's kind of branching out a bit, and I kind of liked it.
Going into the next kind of era of this album, the next portion of this record, because I always, you know, thinking thematically of the Demita Joe record, I've always kind of seen it broken up into four different parts. You know, the first part, we have the introduction, we have the sexuality, we have the Demita Joe, we have the strawberry, we have the being a little saucy, a little cheeky, and then we have the island portion, which is the next branch of songs, and then we have the dirty sex era, and then we have more backed up being, you know, down to earth era of the record. I could call them eras, but portion. So we're getting into the island portion. And track six, we have the interlude, The Islands, where she talks about how much she loves the islands. And then we have the track of this little combination, Spending Time With You, track number seven.
So Islands is the perfect way to like move into the Spending Time With You. Like, it's just like, I'm going to use the word lush again because it is lush to me. But it's just like, introduces this track perfectly. If you close your eyes right now and just like picture like you're there's a beach, and then it's like it's sunset, and like it's completely quiet, there's no one else there except for you, and then all of a sudden the song starts playing. It's a beautiful intro to the song, and then Spending Time With You, like that song is just R&B gold.
It is on a lot of my baby making playlists.
Yeah, it's romantic, and it's also got a little bit of sexiness to it.
Are you ever able to have Janet on your baby making playlists, or are you the fan that like can't listen to her because you'll start singing?
A little bit of both, actually.
Depends on the song.
It depends on the song. But it's like, if Would You Mind comes on, it's like, okay, well, I think I'm going to start singing this.
Yeah, the funniest thing, Would You Mind is probably the dirtiest one, but it's the one that I sing the hardest.
Yeah, it's like, okay, wait, I just got to do this part.
Exactly. Spending Time With You is very romantic. It's funny because, you know, Spending Time With You, beautiful R&B song. It's just a nice song on the album. It didn't need to be a single, but it's a beautiful song on the album. But then going into the next portion of songs, which is, you know, the Magic Hour interlude into Island Life, you kind of get the little bit more pop feeling that you're like, oh, these could have been singles. You know, Magic Hour, which is track number eight, it is an interlude. I always think of her whenever I see a sunset. I always think the Magic Hour. And she loves the Magic Hour. She just storied it on Instagram the other day.
Yes, I do that.
Yeah, I know you do. I always feel like Magic Hour is always a good time to like be creative too. I always feel like even like right now is kind of like it would be, you know, considered the Magic Hour. You know, it's a good time to be creative. Do you find yourself ever writing during those times? I know, I'm sure Janet does.
Oh, I'm sure she does. Like if you can sit outside and just see the sunset, like this, the ideas that might just come into your head when you look at it. Like it just bathes you. You know, with just warmth. And yeah, I find it creative. Like I kind of write it all times of day, but I especially like either early in the morning or late at night, but especially right now, like it's just this gold that kind of bathes over everything, just paints everything. It just kind of makes everything feel a little shimmery and sweet and warm and lovely.
Yeah, it gives a warmth and it gives something extra. She always is very great with spoken word, and I feel like she does such a good job of doing that and capturing each song in this kind of island portion of the record. And then we go into Island Life, written by Scott Storch and Kathy Dennis. What an interesting, for those of you guys who don't know, you know, Scott Storch is Scott Storch, who worked with Paris Hilton and X-Tina. You know, Scott Storch is the man who co-wrote Fighter with Christina Aguilera, and he did all those hip-hop songs in the 2000s with like Method Man and shit. And then we have Kathy Dennis, who literally wrote Toxic by Britney Spears.
Mm-hmm. And for those who are like, remember like way back at early 90s, she had a hit called Too Many Walls, and it's like super poppy, super lovely, super, I'm so... That was my last introduction to her, like her as a singer, like right. Just for her own single. So then fast forward to this song, I was like, oh, wow, she wrote this.
Well, you know, she had gotten really big as a songwriter because she co-wrote Can't Get You Out of My Head by Kylie Minogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah,
so that was a massive top. And then she wrote all the S Club 7 songs. R.I.P. Paul, he just died, member of S Club 7. But she wrote all those songs. So then those popped off. So then she started working. And then Britney and Janet were working on their albums at the same time. And so I guess they were all a part of the same sessions that she was writing. So yeah, Kathy Dennis is a co-writer on Island Life. And Janet did perform Island Life on the State of the World Tour. I could totally see this as being the single for like to represent the island portion of the album, because she had just done Feel It Boy with Beanie Man only a couple years before. So Island sound is big for her.
And can we just talk about her vocals on this track? She just went into her chest voice and just like punched it. I was like, oh wow. It just wakes me up.
The sun.
Yeah. It's like you can almost picture like you're on the beach and you thrust your arms out, you're running. It's like, I'm on a beach, I'm gonna sing with my heart out. And like she's singing her heart out.
I'm going to be in Hawaii next week, y'all, and I'm going to be listening to this song on blast, honey.
And use your chest voice and just sing it out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Moving on to track 10, the single, the hit that got away. If there was ever one that got away from Janet's career, it's All Night, Don't Stop.
Oh my gosh. I was just like, this has to be a single. I was just like, the beat was like, I would take the subway to work, and I had my first job around that time, and I would just be bumping this in my headphones, and like, I'd be like, I'm doing it right now. Like, I'm like, have my hands on my knees, and I'd be just like trying to keep up with the beat with my hands. I'm just like, it was such an infectious tune. Wow.
It really was. When I first heard it, when I heard that, bow, bow, and granted, I was only 9 years old, but I was like, oh my God. I was like, whoa. And sure enough, it became a single, and she did everything that needed to be done. She served everything she needed to serve, but they were not having it.
No, they weren't even having it. And it's so upsetting.
This song was written by, obviously, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Janet, the three of them in their, you know, in their glory. And it has some dance hall. It kind of has an electro funk vibe. It has an R&B vibe. The song is just, you know, it was just destined to be a radio hit. And I really do feel that if it wasn't for the bullshit that happened with the Super Bowl, then it would have been a hit. It has that amazing sample of Herbie Hancock's Hang Up Your Hang-Ups from 1975 to give it that funky feeling that it needed. And it just, even like, even the references she makes in the lyrics, like to earthquakes, even like to like masturbation and like pole dancing, like she's sexy, she's dirty.
Absolutely. Well, jerk it like you're making a choke. I'm just like,
yeah. Choke me, daddy.
She was totally having fun with these lyrics, and the lyrics fit with this beat. And like, you just, I mean, I don't know if you try, like, do you ever try to like keep up with her when she's singing these lyrics? I'm just like, it's a workout.
Working like you're working the floor, shake it till you're shaking the floor. This is a huge song that I run to. This is one of my big running songs.
Seeing her perform this, and I'm so glad that she performed this as many times as she did.
Yeah, like I saw her do it during the Unbreakable tour, and I saw her during State of the World. So it's okay that she's not doing it this time, because I've seen it, and I'm happy that she has performed it many times. During the Demita Joe era, she performed it everywhere. SNL, she performed it on Much Music, or on Much More Music, I should say, when she came in for the live performance. Did you go to that, by the way?
That one is the only one I missed.
This is the next time that she came to Canada, guys. In 2004, she did an appearance at Much More Music, which was kind of our VH1, I would say.
I'd say that, yeah.
She performed it everywhere, and this song was meant to be a hit. It's dirty, it's sexy. It's really just about dancing all night. Sweaty dance club, kind of like an I'm a Slave for You vibe by Britney Spears.
It's having fun talking about sex, and it doesn't have to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be dirty in, as in a negative thing. It could be dirty in a fun thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be such a have such a negative connotation to it.
Of course. Well, Janet is one of the women that taught me to be the sex positive king that I am today. All Night Don't Stop and these types of songs, like where you embrace your sexuality and you mix it in with just having fun and having a good time, I really feel were important to me and to growing up. This song obviously was released as a single. It unfortunately did absolutely nothing on the charts due to the major ban that was going on, the blacklisting that was going on due to the Super Bowl and Les Moonves from CBS Corporations, the asshole who tried to ruin her career. I will, however, point out that in Canada, the song did get to number 25 on pop radio. In the US, on pop radio, it got to number 33 on the top 40. So it at least got some plays. That just goes to show you that people wanted to play it. It just, the minute that they did, they got complaints and they couldn't. And it was disgusting what happened. It reached number 119, number 19 on the Bubbling Under charts, which is very unfortunate. But, you know, it's not all bad for the song. I mean, it did still reach number one on the US dance songs chart. It reached number 13 in Spain, number 19 in the UK. So it got some love, but it could have been so much
more. Yeah, and it should have been. And like they even retooled it and had a remix with Elephant Man and released that. And she performed that in the BET Awards. And so she did do a lot of work trying to promote this track and perform it everywhere, performing two different versions of it. And it still goes to show that despite all the forces that were trying to work against her, people were still feeling.
I don't remember them ever playing any songs of hers on the radio during this time. Do you?
No, not to me. I think the night of the Super Bowl, we heard Just a Little While.
Because my memories, I remember being very young and hearing Doesn't Really Matter, All For You, Someone's Call My Lover on the radio like all the time. Like I remember that. And then the only song of hers that I remember hearing on the radio after that wasn't like Together Again or like Escapade, was Feedback when it premiered. I remember hearing Feedback on the radio when it premiered. That I remember hearing because I used to listen to the radio all the time. But I remember 20YO and Demita Joe, they didn't even bother. At least with Discipline, Feedback did get radio love. They didn't even give it a chance.
No, they didn't. They didn't. It's such a dark time. Like, especially like, not just for like Janet and her career, but just for the fans, because the fans had to witness this and like see it. And like, this is such a good song. This should be a hit. We know this would be a hit. We know her record. We know how, and you could just see like how unfair it was. Like, well, it was playing out in real time.
I am happy to say that All Night Don't Stop, I can say that throughout my life, it does seem to be a song that people know. Because I remember being in high school. And I was in high school in the late 2000s, early 2010s. So at this point, it had been out for a while. And I remember we used to do a fashion show every year. But the fashion show was just choreographed dances. And one of the dances was to All Night Don't Stop. They choreographed it to that in like 2011. So it was a song that people knew. Even to this day, when I play it to my friends, like this is a song that people know and remember from at least my generation, which is millennial. We know this song. Like it's a song that was played in, at least in Canada, because it was played on Much Music. I do remember seeing the video on Much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know where it was played quite a bit, but in remix format, the gay clubs.
Yeah, the gay clubs loved the remix of this song.
I heard this in all the gay clubs here in Toronto all the time, the remix, that and it was just constantly playing that song. So at least people still heard it in some form, which was great. But like I remember every single weekend it was playing. Someone was playing it.
It still was a hit. Like, she got a number one out of it. She got number one on the dance club songs chart. So there still was a number one that came out of this album, Haters.
Damn right.
And on to track number 11, a song that she also performed at the BET Awards and was going to be the fourth single before the single and tour was canceled. R&B Junkie sampling Evelyn King's 1981 song, I'm in Love. The ooh-ooh-oohs throughout the verse is what they sample. Amazing song. She performed it at the Metamorphosis residency in Las Vegas. You went to that residency. How was it seeing that live?
Oh, it was amazing seeing that live because just the fun. And we were pretty close, but like, so it was just amazing to see it there. But just like to hear that song live and just to hear the audience reacting to it and to see her vibing with it. Mm-hmm. And it had been like no time had passed because you're performing this song, but it just transported right back to 2004. But it was just like everybody was just celebrating it.
I feel like this is a song that I could have totally seen as being a single, but I also like, and it was supposed to be a single, but I also like picture the video. Like I picture like a roller derby disco vibe, something kind of like what Usher has been doing a lot in Vegas these days. I don't know if you've been seeing, but he's been doing like the roller derby everywhere. And I feel like R&B Junkie like fits that vibe. Like it fits that roller derby, like fun ATL vibe, and it could have been such a big hit, and they were gonna do it, and I feel like at that point in the era, they had kind of just Virgin Records and almost just like, you know what, maybe let's put this to bed. I mean, they always say that she went straight to work into 20YO, and I think she did go right back into the studio, but I feel like it was only because they realized they weren't going to get anything more out of this era.
Yeah, because I remember hearing rumors that they did shoot a video for it, and it was in a roller rink, but once again, that could be fan lore, but...
Right.
It's just, it lends itself to a video. It lends itself to a visual format.
At least you got to see that visual format, but it's unfortunate that we didn't get to see it in its full entirety the way it was meant to be seen. Because just sonically, the song is so strong. R&B Junkie is such a fun song, and it's such a great song that it's almost like, fuck, it could have been so much more.
And it should have been. And I also picture, and this is something I pictured myself, would be like if she had recreated Studio 54, and mm-hmm. had it take place in Studio 54, because she grew up in that time. She was in Studio 54, even though she was like, what, 11 or 10 when she went? But
when she popped the cigarette, she told that story on Tyra.
yeah. But I just imagine if she could just transport herself back to Studio 54 and just imagine her just performing it in Studio 54, like a fake Studio 54, and just this is the song that's playing. Because it just has that. It is all about like old school and going back. And I guess that's something about music in general. It's just like, if you're a fan, like you can picture the visuals to a lot of the songs, even if you never get the visual.
She is a performer. So I'm sure a lot of the time when she's writing and recording, she's thinking about these albums in the way, like, how am I going to perform this? Going into the next track, I Want You being the more R&B vibe, and that being like the urban single, I also feel like she even thinks about the way she performs even those singles, and the way that the visuals are going to look, and the way that her image is going to look. Everything is always a little bit on the calculated side in terms of like, okay, like it's still a business, and she's smart, and she knows what she's doing. But yeah, moving on to the next single, I Want You, another Kanye produced track, and this was the single on the album. I actually remember when I was younger and this was coming out, just a little while, they kind of put it to the backside when they realized the Super Bowl was going to be a thing, and they only kind of focused just on I Want You, and that was kind of like the single, and it had the video, she performed it everywhere. It still went platinum, and it still reached number 57 on the Hot 100, but it, in Janet's standards, it did nothing.
Okay, so I love this song.
I love it too.
And one thing I love near the end where she's like, when she talks about Phil the crying, and then she starts singing Boo Hoo, and yeah. I always just love that. Like, she's singing. Right? Like, I was just like, oh, she's singing Boo Hoo. And I've always loved that. Like, I sing that part. Like, I sing the whole thing, but I'm just like, I love that she's singing Boo Hoo. Like, she's making you feel everything in the song. I just love the throwback vibe of it, and her vocals and the lyrics. Ugh.
It has such a throwback vibe to it, but a throwback R&B vibe. So like it has that soul element to it. It's probably one of her most soulful recordings that she's ever done. It's a beautifully produced song, and similar to what Kanye was doing. Like he did Stay the Night from Mariah's Emancipation of Mimi record. And it kind of has that kind of doo-wop-y throwback like R&B soul vibe.
That's true. That's very true. I should play those two songs back to back.
Did you ever see the BET All Access on set of this video?
I did.
Oh, it's so iconic. I loved seeing Janet, like, you know, she was still in good spirits, regardless of what was happening in her career and everything. Like, she was still like, I love this music. I'm here to perform it. And I'm here to make the best video. And it was a beautifully done video.
And she's a natural performer. So she's going to do what she's supposed to do and, like, forget everything else that's happening outside in the world right in that moment that could be trying to stop her. And, like, and it's perfect. Like, you can feel all the love. And obviously, because she was with Jermaine Dupri at the time and he's in the video, like, it's kind of nice that she's kind of traveling towards him. And we actually just watched this video maybe last night or the night before. There's a nice little, like, Easter egg in the video I only noticed just now, which is, like, when she goes into the grocery store, she passes by a woman. And the woman she's got one of those tumblers, like, you know, to drink water or whatever, but it says Janet on it. I'm like, that's Janet merch that they would have had in the tour. So I just noticed that now. I'm like, oh, that's a little bit of Easter egg. It has her name in there. But it was just
this
nice.
This is one of the only songs on the album that Janet doesn't have a co-write on. But this was one of Kanye's, like, you know, a song that he gave and made for her. I do think it was a nice single. It was a good choice as a single. And I think it would have done much better had there not been bullshit that was going on. And it's a beautiful song.
It should have been a hit. It would have been a hit. It would have been a hit. By Janet's standards, it should have.
Well, moving on to the next song on this album, a song that has always been one of my favorites, and that is getting performed on the Together Again tour.
Mm,
like you don't love me.
She saw your manhood rising.
And then she was fantasizing. I just love how dirty the song is. I want you to, the song is basically, I want you to fuck me hard.
Basically, and like you do on the girls in your dreams. Like, what the hell?
Like the girls you watch on porn. I love the line, watching that triple X porn.
I think that's Strawberry coming out there. Just like, okay, wait a minute. I'm Strawberry. Why am I putting up with this?
It's Strawberry with a bit of Demita Joe, because she's singing like Demita Joe, but she's like speaking the words of Strawberry.
I like that.
I love Like You Don't Love Me. I feel like it's one of the strongest, melodically, it's one of the strongest songs in the album. I love the... Like, Janet's always been very strong at her melodies, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I mean, you could just like... I need to like actually sit and just listen to all the acapellas and stuff. But like you get all those, like the layering of vocals and the calls and answers and everything that she does. Friends and I used to like just sit and like we'd be singing, we'd be harmonizing with like all sorts of songs. But when we come to jam, like, okay, how who's doing which one? Because there's so many. There are so many vocals. And she'll go like super high or she'll take the bottom and the top. And like she's doing everything in between.
She does such a good job of that on this album, but particularly on this song, the way she stacks those. Mm-hmm. Like you hear so many different layers of her voice in this song as well. One of my favorite deep cuts from her career, if I'm being honest. Number 14, the next song, Think About My Ex. The first time she ever worked with Babyface.
Yes. Now, I can't remember like if he wrote it with somebody else.
He wrote it with Tanya White and Andy Kramer.
Yes. I always love this song. It's just because it's got a kind of a bittersweetness to it lyrically.
We've all been there where lyrical content, what she's talking about, you know, when you're with somebody and you're like, fuck, I missed the person I was with.
Right. Yeah. And then and you can hear it in the way she delivers these lines too.
One thing I always noticed about this song is her breaths, how breathy her vocals are.
They're extremely, and I think that's like purpose, like she's trying to like convey that feeling where you're just like, you just can't, you're overcome and like you're just trying to control it, but you can't.
Have that you ever been in that situation?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my gosh, yes, long time ago, actually around this time.
Do spill the tea, darling.
And this is like one of those long distance relationships though, like, you know, like you meet online and you live in two different places and it's just like, oh, I really should be with this person, but it's too far away. And then you end up saying, okay, well, we can't do this. It's not going to work. Still, it's that same kind of feeling, right? We're just the other one just had all these things. And it's hard to let that go.
Well, she says it perfectly. Like, literally when I'm at dinner, when I'm at the restaurant and I'm eating, I'm thinking about my ex. When I'm making love to you, I'm thinking about my ex. When I'm at the movie theater, I'm thinking about my ex. Like, I'm always thinking about him. It's a very raw place to come from.
They're in you. They're part of you. Every aspect of you.
The essence of you. I see this could have... I feel like this would have maybe gotten a single treatment as maybe like the ballad along with I Want You. Like this, like the pop ballad.
And for some reason, I could picture like a black and white video for some reason. It's got a classic feel because I think it's a classic feeling. I think it's something that... It stands the test of time. It could happen now. It could happen like 200 years earlier from now. Like people have been having this same experience.
And they're always going to have it, right? Because that's just human nature, man. Speaking of human nature, the next two songs. I'm basically going to merge them together. Number 15, Warmth. And number 16, Moist. Number 15, Warmth, is about the male blowjob, the male equivalent of receiving head. Whereas Moist, number 16... is the female equivalent. God bless Janet Demita Jo Jackson.
she wanted to make sure that everybody got represented.
Everybody got represented. I think Would You Mind would be as dirty as she gets during All For You, but no, I actually think Warmth is the dirtiest she's ever gotten, because Moist isn't actually that dirty of a song. It's kind of like islandy. It's kind of laid back. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, honestly, has a little bit of gospel vocals sometimes. Warmth, mm-hmm. Like she's making the noises of sucking dick.
When I hear that the first time, I was like, wait, what is she? Oh. I'm like, oh, okay. But also, you can visualize that. Like, you can visually, we've also been there too.
I mean, she literally says, is this all for me?
And then she's like, and then she's like, thank you. And then she's like, thank you. Like, it's a gift. Like, oh, thank you.
Well, it's supposed to be a gift when it's the right way. When it's the right one, it is a gift. Both of these songs were omitted from the non-explicit track listing because there was no way to make it clean. It was like, it's dirty.
There's no way to get around this. No, you'd have to bleep the whole song. I think I prefer, well, I mean, I love them both, but I think I prefer Warmth just because it does veer into the raunch a bit more. But I also love, Moist because like it's the melody and the way she sings it. Absolutely. I also like the subtle dig though. She's like, wait, not yet. You know,
I love exactly. It's so detailed. The lyrical detail, and even when she gets dirty, she's fucking detailed. She's like, wait, not yet. It's like, like she wants you to be immersed in the experience. Rock Wilder also co-produced Warmth, so he did work on this album as well. He did Feel So Right, which is one of my favorite songs on All For You. On All For You with her. I feel like Warmth does have a little bit more of a groove to it than Moist. Like, I feel like a groove in the sense of, like, I call it the porn groove. Like, when you're going to be, like, sexy and you're going to have baby-making songs, there's, like, some that, like, are just, like, better. I feel like Moist, it mirrors the lines of sexuality and then just, like, regular song. If you're not paying attention to the lyrics, you wouldn't necessarily know that Moist is a dirty song, whereas like you hear it and you know it's a dirty song.
You just hear the vibe of it.
And if we ask people on Spotify what their favorite song is, because both Warmth and Moist are over a million streams, and of the more down on the higher end of the streams for this album, Moist has 1,033,854 streams and Warmth has 1,076,030 streams.
Okay.
So Warmth over Moist.
Warmth over Moist.
and moving on now.
And scene.
Number 17 and 18. 17, Interlude, It All Comes Down to Love. Into 18, Truly. Can I be honest?
Mm-hmm.
Not my favorite.
No. I feel like they kind of, that when they blend in together, but they're also kind of, they're so subtle that it's almost like they're not there.
I do feel like Truly, and I love this album and I love Janet, but I'm allowed to have an opinion, guys. I think that Truly is elevator music.
It is different for her because it has that vibe, I think. Because it might be the only one I can think of that has that kind of elevator vibe to it. Like, if you compare it to like Moist or I Want You, then no. Like, it's just like they blow it out of the water. Because they actually have, there's more character to those songs, whereas this one doesn't have much character to it.
I get It All Comes Down to Love as an interlude, and it thematically fits with the album, so I don't have a problem with that interlude. Actually, I do like, as an interlude, I like It All Comes Down to Love.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel that as a song, that Truly is a weak song though.
It's probably one of the weaker ones in the whole album.
Would you rank this as one of your, do you have Janet songs in general? This is a good question to ask you. Are you one of the fans that loves everything, or are you one of the fans that like has songs that you actually don't like?
I'm one of the fans that loves everything except for three songs.
What are those three, Kirky?
The first one is actually a song that we're going to talk about on this album, which is Just a Little While.
What?
I don't know if part of it is because of the association to the Super Bowl. Just because,
oh my god,
but...
You know what? I'm going to wait to give you shit. Okay?
And the other two are from Discipline, Never Let You Go, and...
You don't like Greatest X?
Yeah, Greatest X, that's it. Yeah.
Oh my god, I love Greatest X.
Yeah. Yeah, that one, not a fan. Like, Never Let You Go, she did that on the Rock With You tour, and I liked it a bit more after seeing it live because it had a bit more life to it once I saw her perform it. But, and then Greatest X, I always felt like it wasn't a song that she should be singing. Like, it just felt like it was something like someone much.
Well, we'll get there when we talk about Discipline, but right now,
yes.
Truly is one of mine. And moving on to 1920, the one interlude into Slow Love. This is a favorite of mine, both the interlude and the song Slow Love. So the interlude, the one I love, I especially love it after watching the Janet documentary because we actually see her in the studio working on it.
Yes, yeah, and I just love, the song is so fun. It is so fun, and the vibe is just, it makes
The song Slow Love, but even the interlude, the one, like we have that scene where she's in the studio, and if you guys pay attention, this is in the beginning of the fourth part of the documentary, when Janet is in the studio with David Ritz. You know, he has written for people such as Aretha and Ray Charles, etc. And he worked on all the interludes with her. So Looking for Love, It All Comes Down to, like, you know, the one, it's all about love.
And I love, you know, I love that we got those moments in the documentary. I'm sure I'm not going to be able to clip it because it's under so many paywalls, that documentary. But if you get a chance to watch that part, make sure you watch it. It's around the beginning of the fourth episode. And you see her talking about the one, and you see her working on the one, the interlude. And so that's a beautiful interlude into Slow Love, which is one of my favorite songs on this album. And you talked about how it's one of your favorites as well.
You just hear, like, you just want to dance, but you also just want to be happy. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a happy song. It just puts you in such a happy space.
And it's a little vibey, and it's a little experimental.
Yeah, it's definitely a little different for her. Definitely. It's definitely got, like a Euro kind of, not a Euro dance, but like more Euro experimental Euro type.
Yeah, Euro club. I would say Euro dance, mm-hmm. man, like underground club. What do you think a video for this would have looked like?
I've always pictured for this one, like, she would be traveling for some reason. Like, it's got a traveling vibe. Like, I feel like if I was traveling, I'd be playing this song. Yeah. And all, like, traveling, like, Runaway, where she was, like, leaving and literally traveling, like, by herself.
Slow love undercovers, take it up nice and slow. She's never done this live, has she?
No, she hasn't. No.
I do think this is a fan favorite, though, because, you know, just going back to the Spotify streams, and that's a great, you know, you guys, Spotify streams are a great way to see, like, where the songs lie within the fandom. And this song has over a million streams. And aside from the all-night R&B junkie, I Want You, My Baby, Warmth and Moist, this is the only other song with over a million streams. So this is in, like, the top six most streamed songs on the album.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
You come with the knowledge.
This is a song that is very popular with people and our fans, Jan Fam. The Jan Fam loves Slow Love. And I've noticed that even on Twitter and whatnot. And it's a very strong song. It's one of the stronger songs on the album.
Mm-hmm. It's an all-time nonstop.
Have you ever heard it in a gay club?
I heard a remix in a gay club, but I'm not sure if it was just a DJ that remixed it himself.
But it was Slow Love?
Yeah, but it was Slow Love.
Nice. What from this album, what have you heard in the gay clubs? I'm just curious of what the scene was in the mid-2000s. I was too young to be going out.
Well, I definitely heard All Night Don't Stop all the time. That mm-hmm. that remix. And that one's on all the CD singles and on the vinyl. But I heard that one all the time. And I heard, like, whatever kind of remix of Slow Love that I heard. And keeping in mind, like, it could have been, like, just a DJ playing one song and then he just, like, put the vocals for the other track on top of it.
Right.
So it could have just been like that. And I think I heard one of the remixes of I Want You in a club as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because there are some dance mixes of it too, which are fabulous. Yeah.
When I make my dinner tonight, I feel like listening to an I Want You dance remix.
Oh, they're so good. They're so fun.
What's your favorite? Look up at the Kirk Pod. What's the Kirk Pod? Tell everyone what the Kirk Pod is.
So the Kirk Pod is my iPod. I just call that my Kirk Pod because I treat it like my... I still play my CDs. I still play them because I bought them, and so I play them. But I've ripped all my CDs to my iPod, so I've just now called it my Kirkpod.
Amazing.
And I look at the charts on my iTunes all the time to see how songs are doing on my charts. So it's and Janet's always at the top because that's
of course the way she should be.
Absolutely. And so on the Kirkpod, oh yes, the E Smooth remix of I Want You. That's the one.
You just gave me my dinner playlist for tonight. You guys, the E-Smooth remix of I Want You. Let's put that in there.
Do it.
Well, closing out this album is the country interlude into Just a Little While. The country interlude. Very fun, right?
Very fun. Super fun.
You know, we have that da-da-da-da. I love when Janet talks to Jimmy and Terry in the interludes. It's very classic. It's very go-to Janet. It's very, like, say. It's very, like, this is a Janet album, you know?
Yeah. Some nice levity that is always welcomed.
Now I'm done being easy on you. What the hell's your problem? Why don't you like Just a Little While? That song is iconic. What's your problem?
I don't know. When I first heard it, I was like, oh.
You didn't like it?
I didn't like it.
What did you think? You actually thought to yourself, I don't like this song.
Yeah, I did. And that would have been the first time I ever felt that way towards a Janet song.
Why?
It just, it did not. I honestly never, as soon as I heard it, I was like, I just did not like it. And that never happens. Like, if you see, I play it still, but I'm just like, I still know the lyrics. I still sing it. But I'm just like, I love the remix, though.
I was going to, that was my next question.
I love the remix. I love it. Absolutely. I love the vocals. I just love the fun vocals of it. And it just... That one's another one where I can see, like, okay, she should be in a roller rink or something. It's like, it's a bright and colorful video. Like, I could just see all the colors. And don't get me wrong, I love, like, the video for Just a Little While is super creative. I like that it's futuristic because she does like all the sci-fi type things. So you see that, like, you got all these spaceships and everything kind of floating behind her in this, like, massive condo that she's in. So I liked that kind of vibe, and she looked fabulous.
Just a Little While was the first single from Demita Jo. It was going to be the big comeback after All For You. It was testing amazingly. It was doing so well, it leaked. And they had to put it out early. And then obviously the Super Bowl happened and then everything went to shit. So that's why the song only reached in the US number 45. But that was number 45 without it even being released. So it would have been number one. There was plans, because it was such a pop song, to release it to urban stations under the remix Love Me. And that remix has leaked and we've heard it, and it is included in the intro to this, to the Together Again tour. She doesn't sing it, but you hear it in the intro being played. So there is some love being given to it. But it was going to be released as a thing. And then obviously when they saw the single was going nowhere because of the Super Bowl, they were like, fuck it, let's just focus on I Want You. But I love this song. This song reminds me of an early 2000s romantic comedy. I feel like I could hear this on a scene in the movie Raising Helen or 13 Going on 30, you know?
It definitely has the vibe, for sure.
It definitely has the vibe. And the song actually was a big hit otherwise. It was number one on the Dance Club Songs chart. So that means that the Demita Jo album had two number ones in that chart. This song and All Night Don't Stop. It reached number two in Belgium. It actually went number three in Canada, guys, on the Hot 100 in Canada. Just a Little While was number three. Number three in the Netherlands. Number six in Spain. Number 15 in the UK. So it was still... It was... If it wasn't for that ban, the Demita Jo era would have been another major era. And Just a Little While is an indication of that because, you know, without it even being out, it was going to be number one. And then out of nowhere, they were like, no. And it's just, it's really sad to see. But I love the song. I love the guitar. This is another Dallas Austin song. He worked on her with her on this record for many songs, as we talked about. And Kirk may only not like it because of the negativity associated with it. But I guarantee you, if it became a hit and Love Me became also the urban remix, as like kind of like Fantasy had the ODB remix, I feel like you would have a different opinion. I really do.
Yeah, maybe I would. I think the association, maybe that's tainted it a bit for me. That could have been, because that was such a very upsetting time for fans, I think. Extremely upsetting. Especially because, like, you have people everywhere ask, because once they know you're a fan, it's like, so what do you think happened? Why do you think, like, and so they're just like, oh, no. So I think that kind of tainted the song too a little bit for me. So I guess we won't know, huh? Unless she releases it again.
Well, the funny thing is I remember, you know, I mentioned how I remember this era quite a bit. And because I was 8, 9 years old, so my memory is very good at that time. But I remember, like, seeing the Super Bowl and thinking, oh, the new album's coming. And I never heard the single. And I waited for a month to 2 months to hear the single. And I remember only hearing Just a Little While when I saw it on Much Music at the end of March of that year. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, it was premiered on the radio the day of. But I'm like, I never heard that as a kid. So the average person only heard of the single. They actually didn't even hear of it. They just heard she has a new album out. Like, they didn't even get a chance to hear it. And I use my experience as the example because even as a kid, I was so tuned into this stuff. And I would have known if there was a big world premiere. And I never heard it. I loved this song when I first heard it because I remember being like, oh, I'm so excited for this album because I loved Janet. And to this day, it's one of my favorites. It is my favorite video from the Demita Jo era, even though there were three videos. But this is my favorite one. Which one's your favorite video from this era?
I think it's a toss-up between I Want You and All Night. I love the opening of the All Night video because it's kind of a throwback to That's Where Love Goes, where they're just kind of like joking around and chatting before they actually get into the track.
Before I let you go today, I always love to ask my guests what their three, if they were introducing this album to somebody who's never heard a Janet album or even never heard this album, what are the three songs that you would make sure that they listen to? You're like, you have to hear these three songs. What are yours? Oh. What are your choices?
Oh, okay. All Night Don't Stop, Island Life, and I Want You.
Why Island Life? Because that's the only one that's not a single.
Those vocals, they blow me away every single time I hear that song. Those vocals just blow me away. I want people to hear her vocals. I want her to sing from her chest. Joyous it sounds.
Because she has a beautiful voice and people don't give her the credit she deserves.
They don't.
Before I let you go, please let the people know where they can find you on social media, what you're about, any projects you have coming up.
So you can find me on Instagram at Kirk DeMattis, KirkDeMattas. At Instagram. And I have a lovely link tree that has all my links. But what I'm currently working on right now, as I mentioned earlier, as I'm a poet, and I'm currently working on a short film, which I haven't announced to anyone yet. I'm only announcing it here for the first time.
Oh!
So I've been working with a fellow poet, a friend of mine named Dylan. And he and I talked. Actually, just before the pandemic, we talked about like, okay, well, what would you want to do sometime? And I just said, I always wanted to turn my poetry into film. And I've done that with short videos, but I always want to do it as a film. And so we spent the entire pandemic writing and working on pre-production for a short film. We're beginning filming in May. So we're
nice.
We're getting there. And this is the first time I've mentioned it. I haven't mentioned it anywhere else. I've just dropped hints. It's a film.
Hey.
So, yeah.
So you heard it here first, you guys. Short film coming your way. Any titles or should people just stay tuned to your social media? Like, what can we look for?
Yeah, stay tuned to the social media because we're going to do a special rollout plan for it. I've added music to my poetry in the past, including last year when I recreated some of my poetry and recorded it as an EP. We are open to trying something different in terms of how we promote it. But yeah, we're putting a lot of work into it. Go to my Instagram, and once the announcement comes out, it's game on.
Amazing. Well, I can't wait for it to come out. Thank you for choosing here to be where you announced it first. And
well,
you guys
can
obviously tune into my Instagram as soon as this project is out. We will make sure to share it for all of you guys to be able to see. Thank you, Kirk, so much for coming on today. I have been wanting to record with you for so long. You are the epitome of what a Janet fan and a Jan fan member is. And I'm so excited to celebrate with you at the concert. I can't wait to see you there.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Thank you for having me. And I cannot wait. We're going to be a few rows apart from each other, so it's going to be easy to like.
Yes, you guys, Kirk is in second row and I'm in fifth. So we will be right there jamming out.
Yeah, we're going to be sweaty and loving it.
Living our best lives. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, you guys. Well, thank you for listening. And make sure to follow me on my Instagram at Planet2000. You guys, go listen to the Demita Joe record. Have your Demita Joe moment. Have your Janet moment. All right, guys. Have a great day. Bye.